It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. On today's program, just by following the issues that are front and center right now, we will wind up with three segments today about issue-oriented debates within the Democratic Party. We'll have New York City Council Speaker Cory Johnson, who appeared at the Elizabeth Warren rally in Long Island City Friday night with avowed opponents of Amazon coming to New York. We know Democrats are divided about that. Now Elizabeth Warren is entering that fray with Cory Johnson at her side. He's also proposing a New York City takeover of the bus and subway system, which Mayor de Blasio and Governor Cuomo do not support. So that's a division among Democrats locally. We have Breonna Gray from The Intercept today on the new debate among the Democratic presidential hopefuls about reparations for African Americans for slavery and other discrimination. That will include clips of Bernie Sanders and Julian Castro on different sides of that in the last few days. And we'll begin right now with the very difficult debate among progressives about Israel and about Congresswoman Ilhan Omar's remarks about Israel that included anti-Semitic cliches or tropes. This is a conversation that is dividing progressive Jews, and that's the conversation we'll have today with two guests. We'll meet them in a minute. But just to review, the freshman congresswoman from Minnesota who came here as a Somali refugee as a child and became one of the first two Muslim women elected to Congress last November is under fire for a tweet in 2012 that said Israel had hypnotized the world, a tweet this year that said support for Israel in Washington is, quote, all about the Benjamins, meaning $100 bills, and this remark at an event in D.C.
About the political influence in this country that says it is okay for people to push for allegiance to a foreign country.
Allegiance to a foreign country. All three remarks offended many Jews because they reference classic anti-Semitic tropes or cliches, Jews mystically hypnotizing the world, Jewish money conspiracy theories, and Jews being disloyal to the countries they live in. On Thursday, as many of you know, House Democrats voted unanimously to condemn all kinds of hate speech without singling out Omar or what she said, and Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi said this about her freshman colleague.
I don't think that the congresswoman perhaps appreciated the full weight of how it was heard by other people, although I don't believe it was intended in any anti-Semitic way.
Now, all of this has led to President Trump trying to capitalize on it politically in the last few days, saying things like this.
The Democrats have become an anti-Israel party. They've become an anti-Jewish party, and that's too bad.
Now, in 2016, remember, more than 70% of Jewish voters in this country went for Hillary Clinton, as they do for Democrats generally. Trump is hoping the Omar controversy changes the balance for 2020, despite so many questions about his own bigotry of many kinds, including saying there were good people on both sides of the neo-Nazi rally in Charlottesville, where they chanted, Jews will not replace us. With me now for two views are Batya Unger Sargon, opinion editor of the Jewish news website The Forward, usually considered a progressive Jewish publication, and Jessica Smith, chief operating officer of the Jewish-oriented lobbying group J Street, which calls itself pro-Israel and pro-peace. Batya, welcome back. Jessica, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Batya, you wrote that almost as upsetting as having a member of Congress repeatedly say things that evoke the most horrific episodes in Jewish history was the response to Omar's words on the progressive left. Want to lay out your feelings on both halves of that?
Sure. Let me just start by saying thank you so much for having me. I think, Brian, you teach a lot of us how to respect points of view on all sides, which is something that our country desperately needs right now, and I've definitely internalized as the major, major imperative of an opinion section. So thank you for your
that
service.
Means a lot. Thank you very much.
I want to start by saying we are long overdue in this country a discussion about Israel and about the closeness between this country and Israel and how we can be leveraging that closeness to end the occupation of the Palestinians. We are long overdue for that conversation. Criticism of Israel at a time when Bibi Netanyahu is making common cause with avowed racists and denying the citizenship of Palestinians including Palestinian citizens of Israel, it's not only not anti-Semitic to criticize Bibi and Israel on those grounds, it is a moral imperative. I truly believe that, and I think I am joined by many, 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 if not the majority of American Jews in that, 85% of whom oppose the occupation. Congresswoman Omar is not having that conversation. She's not criticizing Israel. She's not proposing legislation to help end the occupation. What she is doing is, as you said, characterizing support for Israel in a way that falls very neatly into tropes and stereotypes and cliches that we Jews recognize and really evoke the worst episodes from our history. It is also the case that she is facing disgustingly Islamophobic and racist attacks, and it is also the case that the Republicans have zero standing with which to criticize her because they themselves have trafficked in these exact same stereotypes to murderous ends, right? The murderer who murdered 11 holy Jews at prayer was quoting an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory that Trump himself, our own president, trafficked in and hasn't apologized for.
You're talking about the Pittsburgh synagogue attack.
Exactly, yes.
You're making a distinction, I think, between Omar criticizing Israeli policy and criticizing support for Israel in this country. Is that an important distinction?
I definitely think so, yeah, because
The
truth is that the American Jewish community, thanks in large part to the closeness between President Trump and Bibi Netanyahu, is now more than ever willing to have that conversation, ready to have that conversation, eager to talk about how can we leverage our closeness with Israel to end the occupation. And so when you allow anti-Semitism to enter into that conversation, when you allow anti-Semitic tropes to infiltrate criticism of Israel, you make it so much harder for the Jewish community to join that conversation when we're actually at the forefront of it.
Jessica, your response to any of that so far?
So thanks again, Brian, for having me. Let me just start by saying I just want to share what happened in Congress last week. Congress grappled for a week over these really tough issues of anti-Semitism, bigotry, and how we talk about U.S. policy toward Israel. And I think we can all feel relieved that at the end of the week, the House passed a very strong condemnation of anti-Semitism, which no doubt is on the rise in this country. But they also took a strong look at Islamophobia, bigotry, and racism in all forms. And I know Batya and I have talked a lot about how, this is a problem across the board, not only anti-Semitism, but all of these rising isms in our country. And we sent a message that the Congress sent a message that hate is not acceptable. The bad news, as we're talking about today, is that the American political debate over Israel and the Palestinian conflict has grown more and more polarized and less productive by the day. And these vital issues that Batya is referencing as well, and what J Street focuses on a daily basis, working toward an end to the occupation, an end to the conflict, and ultimately bringing peace and security to the region, have been lost when we create this dangerous environment in which we weaponize anti-Semitism. And I also want to reinforce that from J Street's standpoint, if we are going to have an honest conversation about the culture of anti-Semitism, intolerance, it has to include this notion that it starts at the top with holding our president accountable and Republican leadership who have truly created a dangerous environment in the last 2.5 years.
But I think you disagree with some of Batya's interpretations of what this debate is about and the threats to Jews in America, even Israel aside for the moment, as she characterized them. Yes?
So here's what I would say. I would say that when we talk about these issues of Israel and the U.S.'s relationship to Israel, there are great sensitivities. These are really emotional and complex topics, and I think that words absolutely matter. We have to be thoughtful and nuanced about how we frame these arguments. I always joke that at J Street we are bad tweet writers because we don't have the luxury of speaking in sound bites. These are complex topics, and the issues warrant really sophisticated and nuanced responses. And I think that, I hope that Congresswoman Omar herself understands that the word choices that she has chosen over the last few weeks have been problematic. They have fallen differently on different ears. You could suggest that they either crossed lines or seem to cross lines into territory that many American Jews are not comfortable with. You know, I have some friends in the Jewish community who agree with what she says and believe that her sentiments, particularly around the influence of AIPAC, you know, that she was speaking truth to power and that somebody should be calling, you know, these things out on a regular basis. I have many more friends who were deeply unsettled and uncomfortable with her words. They felt that they were provocative, they were glib, and not useful in this debate. And there were some whom, you know, these words really, you know, they really troubled, and they felt like they really were reinforcing some age-old tropes. So I don't want to minimize at all the reactions from different people within the Jewish community, because they fell differently for different people. You heard that quote earlier from Nancy Pelosi, from Speaker Pelosi, and I agree with her sentiments that I do not believe that her comments were driven from a place of anti-Semitism, but I certainly agree that they veered into problematic territory. And again, I believe words matter, and I hope that Congresswoman Omar will be more thoughtful in her commentary moving forward so that we can have a healthy debate. But I think what is ultimately important here is that we are having a debate about the policy matters that matter to all of us as Jews and matter to the peace and security of Israel. And when we leap to discussions about process and how to talk about the policy matters rather than talking about the policy matters themselves, we lose sight of what's important here.
So there's a difference between you, I think. Bhatia, you would argue that talking about how we talk about those issues matters more than Jessica Smith from JPAC was just suggesting?
I don't think the onus is on the Jewish community to not get offended by things that are offensive. That's what I would say. Yes, there is a very, very small fringe part of our community who are, like all parts of our community, a very important part of our community, who don't think that what she said, that she said anything wrong. There's a larger segment of the far left who feels that even if she did say something uncomfortable or unfortunate four times, that we should be respectful of where she's coming from, that she is a refugee, that she's a woman of color, that she is a Muslim, that she gets increased attention, and therefore we shouldn't be calling it out. I agree that she gets increased attacks, attention in a racist and disgusting and deplorable way. I don't think the onus is on Jews to not speak up when we see hatred. The Democratic Party should be the party that has a zero tolerance policy for bigotry and hatred across the board, including for Jews.
Well, I guess, and listeners, if you're just joining us, we're getting two progressive Jewish takes which differ from each other on the whole Ilhan Omar controversy and the issues that have flowed from it and U.S. Israeli policy in the first place. My guests are Bhatia Unger-Sargon, who is just speaking, opinion editor of the Jewish news website The Forward, usually considered a progressive Jewish publication, and Jessica Smith, chief operating officer of the Jewish-oriented lobbying group J Street, which calls itself pro-Israel and pro-peace. Our lines, you won't be surprised to hear, are already full with people calling in who want to say something or ask something about this. We'll get to some phone calls in a couple of minutes. But to follow up on the exchange you just had, let's discuss to what degree you each think the two recent statements by Congresswoman Omar are factually true or untrue. But you just referenced what some people you know say, which is when she says it's all about the Benjamins, meaning I think some very wealthy American Jews and pro-Israel organizations spend large amounts of money to influence our government not to be even-handed on Israeli-Palestinian policy. You know, Jews and Muslims are each around 3% of the U.S. population, but Muslim groups don't have the money to spend on tilting Congress toward Palestinian rights. And so money, the Benjamins, the argument goes, is objectively a big factor on why the U.S. is one-sided on the conflict as Palestinians see it. How wrong is that in your view, and how much if you think it's right, does it make her statement defensible? Because she didn't say anything about Jews. She said something about political support for Israel.
I think the important point here is that, of course, AIPAC is a powerful lobby that spent $3.5 million last year on lobbying efforts. It does not actually donate to individual candidates. So that was wrong. That was like a false thing. But it does direct its supporters. They want to know who the pro-Israel candidate is, and it tells them who they should be directing their money to. So
Well, that's AIPAC. So they do lobbying per se. Then there's Sheldon Adelson, who donates a lot of money to candidates. You could, you know, name other individuals.
Well, she specified that she was talking about AIPAC.
Okay.
So what I would say is that she got the story wrong in a very specific way. She gestured towards something that we should be talking about, money and politics, the U.S.-Israel relationship, right?
Mm-hmm.
But she got the details wrong in exactly a way that took the truth and fit it into an anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic stereotype. So AIPAC's power does not come from money. Its power or influence, whatever it has, comes from the Zionism of the American people. It comes from the fact that Americans, most of them Christians, want to know who is the pro-Israel candidate that they should vote for. The pro-Israel lobbying group with the largest number of members is actually KUFI, Christians United for Israel. So casting the Jews as, number one, using their money when they're not actually using money, and number two, controlling the levers of power when actually they're offering a non-Jewish electorate information, and number three, basically scapegoating the Jews when actually the story is much larger, much more about Christians and Christian Zionism, that slipped right into that three tropes, right? And it wasn't the first time she had said something problematic. I think that was a major point.
Jessica Smith, do you have any different view on that?
Sure. I mean, I think that we do the policy matters a disservice when we get caught up in talking about process and we neglect talking about the issues themselves. And again, you know, our position is we would rather go straight to that point about not talking about AIPAC and its influence, but rather talking about why their policy issues and perspective is wrong. But let me tell you about why we started J Street. We started J Street 11 years ago precisely for this point, that AIPAC, Sheldon Adelson, and others were seen as the only voices to listen to on policy toward Israel. Then and now, I think very much this community represents a Israel is always right mentality. And that's just not where American Jews are. From our polling, we know that nearly 85% of American Jews believe that you can be deeply pro-Israel and care deeply for the state and its preservation, and also critical of the Israeli government. In the same way that you can do that, mind you, here in the States, I both you know, love this country and have worked to better this country for the last 20 years, and I have a very visceral reaction about this president and his policies. And so, you know, you can hold both of these truths at the same time. It makes me want to fight harder and peel back control from both this president and Prime Minister Netanyahu and try to make things right in both countries. And so that's why we were founded. I think, you know, more than three quarters of American Jews are deeply uncomfortable with settlements and occupation. And that isn't something that AIPAC, Sheldon Adelson, and others in this community are interested in talking about. And I think these are the real critical issues that we have to be focused on if we care about Israel's long-term interests.
Let's take a phone call. Abdul in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Abdul, thank you so much for calling in.
Good morning. I'm from Ocasio territory. And in the 80s, a CNN commentator said Capitol Hill is Israeli-occupied territory. And Paul Finley wrote a book, a congressman, that dared to speak out. Look, times have changed. You can try to demonize Ilhan Omar or Ocasio or Rashida, and you're going to have more of them. So right now is the time to stop the debate and start military action against Israel occupation of Palestine. 70 years is enough, folks. Enough of debate. Just as Iraq was kicked out from Kuwait, the same thing should happen to Israel right now.
Does it matter? And I know you're saying you're advocating for military action against Israel to end the occupation. I hear your position on that. But when somebody uses what are historically anti-Jewish tropes in their political language, why is that any more acceptable than when somebody uses anti-Muslim tropes in their political language, say, against Al-Qaeda extremists? Abdul, do you want...
The question is, the Muslims are going to be picked apart no matter what. I mean, the demonization of Islam and Muslim in the society is so widespread and prevalent that whether it's Ilhan Omar or Rashida, they'll be picked apart. So what we need to have a more dynamic conversation of ending the occupation and ending the source of the problem. That disease, the occupation, that should be, that can only be ended by military intervention by the U.S. or China or Russia or any other.
Abdul, thank you very much. We appreciate your call. I think we're going to get a very different point of view from Leah in Greenwich, Connecticut. Leah, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in. Hi, you're on the air, Leah.
Yeah. I think we had enough debate about anti-Semitism for thousands and thousands of years. It's there. Don't whitewash it. And I'll tell you, where is Chuck Schumer in all of this? He doesn't open up his mouth. And there's nothing worse than an anti-Semitic Jew. And these liberal anti-Semitic Jews have no place in this conversation or debate.
For you, what makes an anti-Semitic Jew?
Somebody who is just absolutely against Israel and against Jewish. And if somebody slanders the Jews and they say, oh, well, let's have a debate about it. Well, there are two sides to it. I mean, come on. This is getting ridiculous. It's been ridiculous.
Leah, thank you very much. Well, I think that's a challenge to your interpretation, Jessica Smith. What would you say to Leah in Greenwich and people who might agree with her? Jessica, can you hear me?
I would say that we all agree that anti-Semitism is serious and a growing concern in this country. It goes without saying that we all need to stand up and fight it and oppose it. And I don't think any of us on this phone call are minimizing the real threat of anti-Semitism. And when we're having this discussion, I alluded to this earlier, we need to raise the question of where is this culture of anti-Semitism and intolerance and hatred of our neighbors coming from? And I would argue that it very much starts at the top. You know, we have a president in this White House who, from his earliest campaign days, has set the tone that it's okay to disparage those who are not like us, whether it's Jews, immigrants, people with disabilities, and you know, the time has come to put an end to this and say it's not okay to create a culture in this country where these kind of this kind of tone setting is allowed. So I'm in 100% agreement. And let me just reiterate that J Street was founded more than 10 years ago to be a mainstream voice for American Jews who are deeply pro-Israel, care about the security of Israel and peace and security in the region, but also understand that in order to return, in order to ensure Israel's statehood and security, we need to have serious conversations about the two-state solution, ending the occupation, and policy paths that take us in the right direction to ending this conflict.
And listeners, if you're just joining us, we're getting two views from two Jewish guests with progressive Jewish organizations on the controversy surrounding Congresswoman Ilhan Omar's remarks. Recently, just speaking with Jessica Smith, COO of the Jewish lobby group, I'm sorry, pro-Israel, I guess they call themselves pro-Israel, pro-peace lobby group, J Street. And we also have Batya Unger Sargon, who's the opinion editor of the Jewish news website, The Forward, usually seen as a progressive news organization. And they differ on some of these things. Batya, to the first caller, Abdul in the Bronx's point, or one of his points, where does the question of power come in? He dismisses whatever language this is as not having much in effect because the the Muslims are always going to be picked on and marginalized for whatever they say, is his argument. And anti-Semitism is obviously bad. Anti-Muslimism is obviously bad. And Jews do face real risks. Obviously, look at Pittsburgh, as you referenced before, though that was right-wing anti-Semitism. And yes, there are terrorist attacks in Israel by Hamas and others. But on the question of power, which he was suggesting there, Congresswoman Omar is speaking to the rights of Palestinians who are experiencing what feels to them like massive oppression at the hands of a very powerful Israeli state and military in their day-to-day lives, so powerful relative to them. So does a power differential make this different from, let's say, made-up tropes about Jewish power when Jews were just minority groups in Europe?
To me, the most devastating part of this is that when Congresswoman Omar was elected and when Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib was elected, and they were willing to show a willingness to criticize Israel, I was so excited because we must have this conversation. And what happened is she made it so much harder to have that conversation because, you know, at the end of the day, Jews should not be expected to put themselves in the line of fire. Right? And who can end the occupation, right? Only Israel can end the occupation. And only lefty Jews like me and like Jessica can convince them to. So when the left says you need to be silent on anti-Semitism or you need to respect the power differential and asks us who still have, my grandfather who survived the Holocaust is still alive, thank God, and asks us to put aside our genuine fears, that's a non-starter, not just for our community because we must oppose all hate. It's a non-starter for ending the occupation because if you want your left to not have Jews in it, you're not going to be able to help the Palestinians. I truly believe that. And so to me, what she did by using these ugly tropes is make that conversation that we are desperately in need of that much harder.
Jessica?
So I think we can all agree that this kind of rhetoric, which tends to veer toward finger pointing and not intelligent, reasoned debate is not helpful. I do worry that there is a pattern in this country of weaponizing anti-Semitism and the charge of anti-Semitism in order to shut down debate. Many times this charge is used to delegitimize the critic of Israeli policy, whoever is speaking out about policy, and the focus becomes who is not anti-Semitic, and the original debate of the substance of the issues that matter is lost, and it stifles the discussion about the actual issues that matter.
And I see you tweeted that any discussion of Ilhan Omar should begin with Trump. Why shouldn't it begin with Ilhan Omar?
So we have spoken out about Omar, and we've talked about how, you know, her commentary does veer into problematic territory. And I, like I said before, these words absolutely matter. But for me, there's not a moral equivalency here comparing these tweets on the left and some of what we're hearing on the left and some of what I would consider, and I would hope we would universally consider, the very negative tone setting that is happening on the right from the president and Republican leadership. They are taking us into very dangerous territory, I would say, both for Jews, but also for Muslims in this country, for African Americans, the LGBT community, the disability community. And we have to be very vigilant and concerned about where we're headed, particularly under the guidance of the right's leadership.
Can I ask how either of you reacted to the very broad resolution that Speaker Pelosi got passed? All the Democrats in the House voted for it, but it didn't particularly single out Representative Omar or anti-Semitism. It was anti-hate in a very broad way. Funny enough, it was only some Republicans who voted against it on the basis that it wasn't specific enough to the issue that brought it to the fore. Batya, how are you on the Pelosi resolution?
I thought it was great. I mean, it's the first time Congress has voted against Islamophobia and called it out. It's the first time any of those Republicans voted to condemn white supremacy, right, and anti-Semitism, even though President Trump has said multiple anti-Semitic things.
Because they were all mentioned in the resolution,
exactly,
along with anti-Semitism.
So I think that's great. Like, you know, I think Nancy Pelosi managed to unite an incredibly diverse party. The South for the Democrats is now going to be much harder for the astoundingly gorgeous reason that we are a incredibly diverse party now, and that Congress has never been this diverse. That's incredible. And they managed to pull that together and condemn all forms of bigotry, and they forced those feckless Republicans who had never denounced anti-Semitism and never denounced white supremacy and never denounced Islamophobia to do so. So I can't help but feel like very elated by that.
Jessica, I have a feeling you're going to agree on this point.
I think Batya and I are exactly in the same place here. Look, it was a tough week in Congress last week. These kind of issues and matters are never easy. It was a difficult week. It was a messy week. It was an emotional week. But ultimately, I couldn't agree with Batya more. We ended up in a very important and encouraging place. It was a resolution that condemned anti-Semitism and took a very strong position on anti-Semitism against Jews, and also recognized that there's a growing culture of hatred against many minority communities. And I think it was absolutely a sign that hate is not acceptable in this country. And I'd suggest that as a minority community ourselves, we are made stronger when we stand up and stand united with other minority communities as well.
Sharif in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sharif.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. You know, I think this is a fantastic debate, and I appreciate that you guys are having it. You know, I think it's, you know, it's obvious, you know, anti-Semitism has no place in the public forum. And I certainly think Representative Omar is doing her part to keep herself relevant in this day and age. But I think there's something, you know, missing from this conversation here, and it's you know, I think there is a little bit of privilege that's being displayed by, you know, mostly socially white liberal group of Jewish urbanites here, where on one hand, you would certainly expect them to, stamp out any of the isms as being a predominantly progressive group of people. But at the same time, I think, you know, it's important to also understand that the debate is really shaped by the fact that, you know, you're talking about a group of people that have spent time, you know, going to birthright trips to Israel and spending a lot of time, you know, being told that, you know, Israel as a political discussion point is something that is tied to their Jewish identity. And I think that's really the difficulty here at play, because a lot of people become sensitive to attacks on Israel or attacks on U.S. support for Israel as being anti-Semitic. And I think that really needs to be detangled. And, you know, at the same time, you know, we need to look I'm looking at this more in the perspective of U.S. support for Israel. And if you look at the first two bills that went through Senate and the House, the first was the anti-BDS bill, and the second one is this, you know, anti-Semitism bill, anti-ism bill that went into play. And of course, the pro-Israel lobby has strength in Congress. Otherwise, that wouldn't have happened. But at the same time, this is all detracting from the fact that the IPAC conference, the upcoming IPAC conference, every single Democratic presidential challenger will be there, on top of Republicans and Democrats. And on top of that, a sitting indicted prime minister is going to be headlining that conference. And if you want to talk about power, that's power. You know, obviously, we have to make sure that we're not going into and raising up really horrible anti-Semitic tropes historically. But we need to also be cognizant of the fact that that group and its supporters do have an outsized, outstripped amount of power in a time where we've had just a lack of bipartisanship completely on every other topic except for seemingly this and maybe one or two others.
And Sharif, thank you very much for your call. So let's end on one of the things that he brings up there, which is the Democratic presidential hopefuls. I don't know if it's accurate that they're going to be appearing, many of them, at the AIPAC conference. Batya, do you know? But it's, or actually, I'll throw that to you, Jessica, being with a lobby group in Washington. Do you know if that's the case? And how much of a division do you see this set of issues being in the Democratic presidential field this year?
Yeah, the answer is I don't know. AIPAC has not published a list of their speakers yet, and they're less than 2 weeks out from their conference, and usually the speakers are very apparent by now. I'm not sure that I agree with the caller that having a beleaguered and indicted Prime Minister of Israel be a keynote speaker at your event is a source of power. I think it's a disturbing trend, frankly, after everything that the Israeli government and Benjamin Netanyahu himself have been engaged in the last several weeks. I think it's disturbing. So I don't know who will be speaking. What I can say is that, you know, J Street has been working for the last decade to open up discourse and change the debate in Congress. And you can see it today in our more than 10 years of existence. We now represent a majority in both the House and the Senate of Democrats who align with J Street's views and our values.
But let me follow up with this, and then we're going to be out of time. What Trump said over the weekend, attacking the Democratic Party as now an anti-Israel party, anti-Jewish party, 70% plus of Jewish voters in the 2016 election voted against Trump for Hillary Clinton. That's typical for the Jewish vote in this country going that Democratic. Are you concerned at all, or either of you concerned at all, that the various responses to this, particularly the more nuanced or, let's say, supportive of Representative Omar responses to this, is going to drive more Jews into the Republican camp for the future? Jessica Smith. Oh, go ahead. But you can go first. Then
well,
we'll
I get first
Jessica.
Want to thank the Sharif for his call, because I think he really modeled perfectly how to have this conversation and be critical of the Israel lobby in a non-anti-Semitic way. So, Sharif, thank you for that. I'm really grateful to you for doing that. I think we need much more of that, and I really, really respect you and the way that you came to that. I do think that there is enormous consensus among the Democratic hopefuls for 2020 on Israel. They are all two-staters, and they all oppose BDS. So it's neither the case that they are continuing in the model of complete uncritical support for Israel, nor is it the case that they are abandoning Israel. In fact, they have become a lot like American Jews, who are incredibly willing to criticize Israel, but also see the importance of the U.S.-Israel relationship.
How about the rank and file? Jessica, when they look at groups like yours seeming to make excuses for Ilhan Omar, as critics might characterize your position, and the potential for Jews who voted Democratic in many elections to go the other way now.
Yeah, I don't think that that's the case. I also agree wholeheartedly with what Batya just said. I think for many Jews, we are not single-issue voters on Israel. We care deeply about a whole host of issues, healthcare, reproductive rights, education, civil rights, etc. I think it's no, you know, with 70% of Jews disapproving of the job that this president is doing and aligning with the Democratic Party, I don't see that changing in the years ahead. I think very much Jews find themselves at home in the Democratic Party. And I think, you know, like Ratcha said, I'm very encouraged about where some of these presidential nominees are in the Democratic Party in terms of being able to both speak out critically about Israeli government policies, but also promoting policies that aim very much to keep Israel secure and bring peace and security to the Middle East.
Jessica Smith, Chief Operating Officer of J Street, and Batya Unger-Sargon, Opinion Editor of The Forward. Thank you both so much for engaging in this dialogue.
Thank you so much, Brian, for everything you do.
And thanks to our callers.